probably 100 feet square, wasn't it? That's very
I'd like to share one comment. I have got to go, but I want to share one comment with these chicks. I'm a grandson, and she never neglected being a grandmother too. And she bridled many a horse for the second grade, the third grade age kid, because we got left away from going out on the range. We didn't have enough saddles. So the crew of 10 or 15 were out cowboying, and we'd get our work done today and at our homes. After lunch, we could go to the ranch. And we'd go down to the ranch, and the old gray mare, this gentle pony, was not cooperating to get the bridle on. So she'd raise her head up. So we'd go get Grandma to help us bridle the horse. Grandma was more than willing to help. And she'd catch many a horse for us. But those chickens were a pride and joy. Spend a lot of time sitting on the fence throwing rocks at cats that wanted kittens and at crows. But one time I went up to Gear to come help bridle the horse, and she's out on the porch, and she's like 70-some years old now. She's out on the porch with her pistol, and there's crows up there that have been after those chickens, and it's like that, and I come walking around the corner and watch her just at the point in time she's shot, and that old gun kicked and that like that. I thought she's going to kill herself. And she was still protecting those chickens at that age and stuff, but she still was Grandma. She didn't neglect duties of being Grandma also, so to all of us grandkids, we knew her in that perspective.
You had a comment next?
Yes, I have a couple of comments. When Herman was well into his 80s, he had a horse fall with him, and young Hamilton took him to the hospital in Montpelier. I was there, and Herman was shaking his head. He said, a man should never ride an old horse. One other comment, Grandma Minerva always painted huge paintings, had them hanging on the wall in the small house, and she often used binoculars to get the perspective. She would look through the wrong end of the binocular to put the painting out there where she could get the perspective.
Mr. Berry, did you come?
I have two comments. This is a little off that other topic. When our class graduated from high school, we decided we'd gift the school with the Minerva Tykert painting. And so I was on the committee to go down and make the arrangements. And I remember she had one there. We didn't give her much notice to do one maybe specific to the area as such, but we wanted one for paintings. Well, we decided the one that was there would be all right. And she charged me $75, which we thought was a little bit expensive. It was this first painting here on the right, or on your left. But that was a painting our class gave for $75.
Well, you think that's worth $75
today? No, I know
it isn't. Times 1,000.
And then the other thing, I'm just interesting. I see Linda over there a little restless and wondering, as a mother of seven and as an artist, how she's feeling and how she can relate to Sister Tykert and her life and what she did.
When you asked the very first question about what motivated Minerva, I had an answer, and I don't know why I would have an answer, because, like I said, I didn't know her, but I do know as an artist that once you feel the excitement of creating something and see where it goes, there's kind of a magical feeling about that. That is so invigorating that you just want to keep doing that, whether it's creating an excitement for learning with children, or creating a relationship that will grow into who knows what, or whether it's creating a painting that tells a story and might inspire someone else. It's that magical excitement of creation that I think was a motivation for her. And I know it's been a motivation for me. And I love to do almost everything that she did, but I don't shoot crows. But I think I might pick it up.
You know, I'd just like to make one other comment here about creation. Because I think that Linda's put her finger on something important here. And to put it in a gospel context, we know as Latter-day Saints that we're supposed to emulate the Lord. And one of the things that we know about him is that he is the creator. And I've wondered sometimes when I hear people say, oh, I'm just not creative. And I was thinking, now, someday we'll stand before the Lord and he will ask us about things. And I was thinking, what would happen if he asked us about, well, did you learn to love people? And we say, well, you know, I just wasn't into love. No? Would that be an acceptable response? And when you think of the plan of salvation and the ultimate destiny that each of us have the potential of, and then you think about creation and how important that is, do we really believe that we can stand before the Lord and say, oh, well, you know, I'm just not creative? As though that's somehow a legitimate answer within the theology that we live with. And I think Minerva sensed that. She understood that. She was constantly out there creating. And sometimes when we look at callings in the church and we feel about fulfilling things and doing things, sometimes we can relate to the importance of administration kinds of things. But the creation stuff seems a little tangential sometimes, but when you put it in a theological context, it's not tangential, folks. It's like the center. And in that sense, Minerva Tyson was very much in the center of her theology. Somebody else said, yeah, come.
Yeah. Well, this is in the sense that people think, I am an art major and I taught art for a while, and people always say, oh, I'm just not very creative. I have sisters who say that, and yet I know they're creative. And the way I know it, and I see it in Minerva Tiger, is that they have children. They've created these children, and they teach their children. And teaching is being creative, because you're creating the child's thinking. You're creating the person that they'll be. And so she wasn't just creative in the way that people think, that she painted and created a beautiful piece of artwork. She created people. She created relationships. She created knowledge in people. And there's more to being creative than just paint and pencils. It's designing and organizing. I like the way in the gospel that it says that the Lord organized the earth and the elements, because that's creating. So you're organizing your child, you're organizing your home, you're organizing aspects of your life and your testimony is being creative, not just paint and fine art.
Somebody else have comments?
If I can make a comment that's appropriate about her death, even though this panel has been about the life of the Tiger. My name is Margaret Dayton, and I'm a daughter-in-law of Lois, and married to one of her sons that is a physician. I do would like to say, though, that marrying into the Dayton family allows me to acquire some of the Dayton heritage, which is an automatic appreciation for Minerva Tiger's paintings, and a great honor that the Dayton family shares that she used Lois's husband as her model for the Christ figure in some of her paintings. But my husband, is being somewhat aware of her passing and the circumstances of it, realized that her art had some influence on her death, because as Glenn was talking about the way she would obliterate lines, she would often paint with her thumb. And he talks about watching her paint and adjust and smooth and fill in colors with her thumb, and is convinced with what he understands of lead poisoning that she died as a consequence of that lead in the paint and died of lead poisoning. Fortunately for all of us, she left us a great legacy before that passing, and we have all been blessed by her life.
She would point out her veins in her hands to me while we were working, and she'd say, that's the result of the lead from the paint. She knew she had it. She knew that it would eventually be destructive to her.
And then she suffered with her eyes.
Glenn, how did she begin this process of taking you under her wing to teach you? I mean, how did that connection start? And why me?
The why me, she invited all of the neighborhood kids to come in and to paint and to learn. But I think most of this, the kids thought that she was way too eccentric. They wouldn't have used that term, but I think that was it. They didn't like her eccentricities. She was an unusual woman. And if you couldn't accept those eccentricities, then you didn't enjoy being around her. And I think for most of the neighborhood children, that was the way that it was. And I don't know why, but my parents sort of drilled into me that I should always be respectful of older people, especially. And that if older people wanted me to do something, I should do it. And if, so I figured if she sat me down on that bench and said, we're going to draw, that I ought to draw. And it was this interest in what she had to teach that kept me there. The other kids would draw for a little while, and then they would escape. And I stayed there because I enjoyed not just the drawing, but the learning. It was magnetic to me. So I think that's why me. And I wasn't the only one. There were others who sat on that bench and enjoyed their time there. But there were a great many who tried to escape. She had an artist temperament. She was an unusual person, an unusual personality, and people who wanted everybody to be the same didn't like to be around someone who was that different, and I appreciated the difference.
I just wanted to ask you a question, Glenn. Where did the seed that she planted for you and that drawing and love of anatomy, where did that go in your life? Did that continue to grow, and has it fruited, and what have you done with it?
This is it. I have a huge appreciation for people who are skillful in these ways. I don't use the word creative. She wasn't creative. She put on canvas and on masonite and on paper bags the things that she saw around her. She had an innate skill and some marvelous learning from some great people like Robert Enright and the great Vanderpool. I don't even know the great Vanderpool's name. I think his first name was Great, because that's all I ever heard was the great Vanderpool. And so as far as my doing anything with what she taught me here, this is it. But the things that she taught me about life, about my religion, about just everything, I guess what I'm hoping is that I've been able to pass that along, because I've been a teacher for 33 years now, and I hope that some of that love of learning has been passed along from her to me and to other generations. That's what I've taken from her and hope has been of some use to someone else.
When there was a mention of brown paper bags, the first Christmas gift that Aunt Minerva gave to my parents was a brown paper bag. My parents were married first, and then shortly after that, Uncle Herman and Aunt Minerva were married. And right after they were married, Uncle Herman went into the Army, and they went up to Fort Lewis, Washington. And while they were up there, Aunt Minerva made some sketches, and they were so humorous. And I don't still have them, because I gave them to Lauren. I wish I had them here to show you today. But she drew Army life as she saw it on brown paper bags. And then she bound it together and tied it with a little brown ribbon, and she gave it as a Christmas gift to my parents. And my mother always saved it. And I wrote a book called Heritage, and it's in the Cokeville Library, if any of you want to read it. And there's a lot about my Aunt Minerva in that book. And in that book, I tell about the Christmas gift that she gave to my parents that was a brown paper bag. And I remember that she had caricatures of all of the different people that she saw at Fort Lewis. And one time she had a drawing of herself and some of the other army wives and husbands seated around a table, and it was an excellent likeness of Aunt Minerva, and she was serving the meal, and Uncle Herman was seated at the head of the table, and she had written the words, her man, and an arrow going down to Uncle Herman. But it was a soldier's life at Fort Lewis, Washington. It was done on brown paper bags, and that was her Christmas gift to my parents the first year they were married.
A lot of women have, I think, really magnified Minerva because she was a woman, because of her accomplishments. But she was anything but a woman's liver, with raising five children, with loving the cowboy. That didn't enter into the thing at all.
One other, and we're probably getting pretty late here, so we probably need to close this up, but there, a lot of people have talked about her passion for telling stories. As she was doing these, did she ever talk to you about the story part? I mean, did she verbally work it out with you? Did she, what was the process she would go through to tell that story? Did she articulate that?
In great detail. When you were watching her painting, she'd give you all of the background of the historical characters, what they were doing, what the setting was. You got the full picture.
I think my experience with Minerva too is when she was doing the Book of Mormon, and she practically went through the book, and so each picture told a story in itself. And I'd like to add that I have noticed that every painting I've seen, most every painting, her accent color, she always included a little bit of red in every picture. That must have been her favorite color. And I'd like to relate one thing too. I marvel at her style. I don't know if it's different than any other artist. And I can recognize it the minute I walk into a building and see one that I've never seen before. And one day, and this was years ago, my husband and I were on a committee for our class reunion at Logan High School. And we were up on the stage in the auditorium. And we were looking at the backdrops because we wanted something special for a program. And he was lifting up, there were several of these backdrops, and he was lifting them all up, and he lifted several, and all of a sudden he came to one, and I said, stop. I said, pull that top one up a little bit. And the further he pulled, I recognized Minerva's painting. And this was a huge painting, as big as a backdrop for a stage. And we looked at that, and it's a picture of Colonel Fremont and a few soldiers conversing with some Indians and lots of horses. And I said, you better tell the principal of this school that there's a very priceless picture here on this backdrop. So the next time I saw this picture, it was in the chorus room. It had been beautifully stretched and framed. The library was, they were redoing the high school, and the library was not finished as yet. But on the north wall now hangs this beautiful painting of Colonel Fremont. On the south side, there's a picture of a woman dressed in a blue pioneer dress, standing before a lighted fireplace. And the colors are just magnificent. And she's standing by a spinning wheel. I've never seen any of these, either picture in any of the books that I have of Minerva. And I just, she's really a mentor of mine. I love her painting.
To answer the question about the story that's in the painting, Sharon said it about as succinctly as it can be said, but I'm looking at those paintings over there. everything that went into the painting had a purpose in the story and the history and the knowledge that went with it. It wasn't just, well, here's this painting, and the chief thing is this guy on this horse, and then the rest of it just sort of falls in the background. Every item in it was a part of the story, and you got that whole story every time that you looked at one that she was working on or one that was finished.
Her paintings are widespread. I've seen them on the East Coast, I've seen them on the West Coast, I've seen them in Laramie. And the experience of one of my family were in Spain. They were going, they had just been visiting where the son had been there on a mission. And the first thing that they walked in the temple of Spain, they saw one of her paintings. It's unbelievable where her paintings are. They're all over Wyoming, they're in Laramie, they're in Rock Springs. It's hard to tell if they're not someplace in their high school, in their churches. I was thrilled the other day as we were at a funeral service in the Malibu Purpose Room with one of her paintings in Salt Lake. One of her earliest paintings in the Salt Lake Temple is the most finished painting I ever saw. She explained that her large murals didn't need to be finished because they were supposed to be viewed from a long distance. And I thought, I wish she'd finish paintings. And she says, there's not time to finish. Those who read must run. And I just marvel at what her paintings have gone.
Her temples, her paintings are worldwide prints of them in the temples. You've seen them in many places of the world.
I was curious as to where was her studio and how big was it? Was she producing a big painting? I mean, did she have to have a big room to produce those large paintings? Or did she paint? I'm finding out through listening to you that she probably painted in her house so she could manage everything else.
The living room was the studio.
Was okay. That's what I was getting at.
Just inside the living room from the kitchen was this big wall. And that was her place where she'd nail up the canvas.
And that's where most of her paintings were painted.
And John, tell them what would happen after the wall got pretty well splattered with paint. What your dad would do.
I don't know. I guess I heard that one.
Well, I think he would just put another coat of paint on, or another coat of wallpaper. And I mean, it was the living room. One of the things that I've always been really admired about Minerva Tiger is we all have ideas and dreams and visions, things we want to do, and we tend to say, well, someday I'll do it. You know, when I get this done, then I will start living. When I get this done, then I will do it. And Minerva Tiger did it. She did not wait for Mignogna. Because Mignogna has a way of just never giving it.
I just want to make one more comment. As I'm learning more about her, I can see a lot of similarities in her and in my life. I have 5 children. I paint out of my house. I compete in mounted shooting, so I like to shoot guns too. And my dad grew up on a ranch. He was a rancher. And it's really interesting, a lot of these similarities. My studio has been in my living room. It's now in a bedroom, but it's been in different rooms. And when I had 3 of my kids in diapers, I just thought, I've got to spend some time painting or I'm going to go nuts. So I would get up in the middle of the night and paint. And did she ever do that too, when your kids were little? Because I can't imagine, with all the chores that need to be done during the day,
And then to get the painting.
Lot of painting every night. He got inspiration or even drawing. He did at least make the sketches. He made the sketch of the last time he had a chance on the wall when you get up in the morning, my dear, I think he's already working on it.
Well, you know, I get my best inspiration at night because everything's so calm and quiet. And I got in the habit of doing it when my kids were little, so I still do it. When I've got to make a deadline and get some paintings out, I'll paint through the night. But she seemed to have such a passion for creating that piece, and it's just on her mind, and I can relate to it. I'll spend 17 hours straight in a row working on a piece till it's finished, and then I can do something else and relax, and I'm thinking, am I the only one like this? Am I nuts?
You're probably a little nuts.
I've been told that. I've been told that. My family thinks I'm a little eccentric in some of those areas, but I try to keep everything balanced. But you know, I'll have laundry going, and I'm canning corn, and I'm doing three things, and then I'm in putting a few strokes on a painting, trying to get it out, and I'm going, she did the same thing, well, she did it in the 30s, and God, my hat's off to her. We didn't have washing machines and dishwashers and stuff where it could get done a lot quicker. But
one of the advantages to having your art in your home as an artist is that most of art is thinking about it. And when you finally thought it through, you don't need to do it. It can happen really, really fast. One of the most common questions that I get asked as an artist, and I know every artist gets this, is how long did it take you to paint that?
Right.
And the reality of it is the painting part takes a very small amount of time. And you mentioned that 30-second block that she might have painted. She might have been stirring those beads and thinking about that painting and decided exactly which stroke she needed, and she can minimize the effort that it took to do it because she got through so long. And almost every artist says the same thing. It's one of the joys of painting.
That's a really good point, Linda. We did some stained glass windows in our dining room. Each one's a foot wide, 6 feet high, tree of life pattern. And people ask me how long it takes to do that. Well, the first window took me a year and a half. Why? Because you have to figure out what you're going to do, what it's going to look like. You do lots of research and books and things. And the second window took me 6 months, because then I was working out the technique. And after that, I could do it in a week. And, in the scripture, there's parallel to that. In the book of Moses, chapter 3, the Lord talks about creation of the world. He says he created everything spiritually before it was naturally on the earth. Well, that spiritual creation is a creation of ideas and spirit and design before you ever actually make it. And, so there's good precedent for that long time period you're talking about. I mean, that's the way the Lord does it too. We've taken, a couple of hours now. Well, why don't I turn them, find that Charles? It's been wonderful to be here. Thank you again. As I'm sitting here, I'm just filled with great appreciation for so many people. And given that we're a bit after our lunchtime, I would leave someone out. But I especially want to thank John, Dorothy, and Tiger for their involvement in putting this together. And there's many people that, had they not been involved, it would not have come together. And just deeply appreciative of those who traveled to participate as artists. We actually have some of the best artists in the nation here, especially in the area of cowboy art. And the landscape artists here at Linda, and the wildlife artists, and the quality of the present show has actually been very exciting as well. And just as some advice for some people out of town, if you're up for fasting today, but if you're not, the country shopper down the road makes some excellent sandwiches and some cold brews that are pretty good. But the Flying J, they have a restaurant. My wife and I particularly like the chocolate brownie thing. So we get to dinner that night.
I see that.
Again, thank you for your participation. We hope you'll find
Lisa to come back to Tokyo. I've asked Ron Tiger, a grandson, to save the village of Winner. Thank you for asking. The shows here will run until about 5:30. And then starting at 3 o'clock, artists will be demonstrating up at the ski lodge. And most of those will be painting outside. We hope there'll be some plain air painting, some of the areas that the Pine Creek being as scenic as it is. But it gives people a chance to kind of wander between different artists or different styles. And we have a great group of artists that are very open. And so feel free to ask any questions that you would like to and observe their creative process.